Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth straight up.
I'm Julie Hagan. I'm working at
an Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage as parents for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Well, welcome to the Chuck and Julie Show. It's Monday, June 23rd, 2025. This is your guest host, Mark Poff, retired detective with the El Paso County Sheriff's Office down in Colorado Springs, Colorado. So I always joke to Chuck and Julie every time that whenever they ask me to guest host, that something big happens, that they're the ones who should be talking about it on their podcast and not me. Well, of course, it's happened again. I mean, I just find it so ironic that, you know, as soon as they say, hey, Mark, can you guest host? All of a sudden, things start flaming up. So if you want to call in, I've already told them that if you call in, they're just going to throw you in, introduce yourself, interrupt, do whatever you want, and we can start talking. So the number is 888-627-6008. If you're on Zoom, I'll try to catch your hand up. But if you raise your hand and you just unmute and start talking, hey, you can interrupt me. We can talk about whatever you want to talk about. But I just find it so interesting that, you know, this whole thing with Iran. And I actually have a little bit of history, and I should probably explain. So everybody knows that I'm a retired detective. I was a cop for 17 years in Southern Colorado, if you want to call it that, down in Colorado Springs. Well, before that, years before that, when I first got out of college, I was a computer engineer. I mean, I was a computer nerd from day one out of college. And I went to work for a very large computer company, second largest on the planet, Digital Equipment Corporation at the time. And then I worked on some really cool projects. Like my first project with Digital was I worked at a uranium processing plant for nuclear warheads at a Goodyear atomic plant. They were the subcontractor in, what was it, Piketon, Ohio or something, middle of nowhere. But we had some GSEP and some other centrifuges, and we process uranium into, I think it's either you go to U-235 or you go to U-238. I can never remember which way, but I worked there, never got near the uranium, wanted to stay safe, but I was a computer programmer. So I worked on that, came out to Colorado. I worked in Cheyenne Mountain for a while. I still working for Digital, but I was a subcontractor and we set up a lot of equipment in NORAD in Cheyenne Mountain. And actually I was involved. I got to be careful, and I'm sure it's no big news now. Back during the first thing in Iraq and stuff, missile warning and all this other stuff, we were watching the plumes and then notifying the troops when Scuds, remember the old term Scuds, being launched and stuff. Well, I worked occasionally in Cheyenne Mountain in Systems Center because my job is I was very young in my 20s. I went around and made sure all the equipment worked and other things like that, and the software worked. If there was a problem with any of the mainframes that we had up there, I was the one who basically got involved and made sure the computer system stayed up. So I picked up some things when I was up there. I've been up in Cheyenne Mountain with the blast doors closed. So that should tell you something. They actually asked me to come up. Wouldn't tell me why, just said, hey, come on up. We need you to come up on this date and time. And I did. And then I asked them, I said, why is that light flashing? They said, that's because they're closing the blast doors. We wanted you up here during this event. And I was like, great. So I was stuck up there for a while. But one of the things that I picked up in working up there is that whenever they do these mission trips or whatever to go bomb, whether it was Iraq or now Iran, you always want to go when you have these stealth bombers, back then it was the stealth fighters. Now we have the B-2 stealth bombers. One of the things that I learned from working in this environment was that you always wanted to go during a new moon, because really about the only way you could shoot these things down is if you saw them. So you fly at night, fly during new moon if you can, and then it's a lot harder to see them. Now, my understanding is they flew a whole bunch of F-22s and a couple F-35s with them to kind of screen. So the odds of them shooting down one of these B-2s would have been slim to none. But Friday, I played in a golf tournament down at Canyon City in the Canyon City Police Department had a golf tournament. I try to make it every year if I can. It's a great tournament at 4 Mile Golf Course, which is probably one of the craziest golf courses in the state. It's very challenging. But I told one of the guys I was playing with when they're like, hey, you know, Trump gave them 2 weeks, you know, to get their act together. I'm like, yeah, I don't think it's going to be 2 weeks. He's like, well, wait a minute. He said 2 weeks. I said, you know, this weekend we have a new moon. And I'm sure all the generals and everybody involved said, you know, we really want to go. If we're going to bomb, we're going to want to bomb during a new moon. So I was kind of thinking, well, we're probably going to see something over the weekend. And something did happen. Now, today's headlines or whatever is that Iran has thrown some scrap metal towards Qatar. And I say scrap metal because they knew it was going to get shot down. Ceremonially, they launched the same number of missiles as we launched on them. And my understanding is none of them made them. And in fact, they didn't even try to take one of them out because it had already run astray. And it was like, just let it go. Who cares? So, and then right after they threw their Scuds or their missiles or whatever at our base in Qatar, the Supreme Leader basically said, we didn't harm anyone and we will not accept any harassment from anyone under any circumstances. It's like, well, yeah, if you're just going to throw scrap metal and it's not going to make it. And they told the U.S. ahead of time that, hey, we're going to shoot some missiles ceremonially your direction just to, you know, to make ourselves feel better. I mean, this is a joke, but so let's get to this whole thing about us attacking Iran. It appears based on the numbers that the vast majority of Republicans support the launching of these bombs, these weapons at Iran, at their nuclear sites to try to take them out. And I get it. I am not a war hawk by any means. I'm kind of more of an isolationist like Rand Paul. I kind of like just we can't be the police of the planet. We need to stay out of this stuff. But here's the deal. We've been talking about Iran for years. I mean 40 years about their terrorist activities, all this stuff, you know, basically being the bully of the Middle East and more to the world for years. And some presidents have talked tough about it and other presidents have not. They all said, you know, they all pretty much agree that Iran should never get a nuclear weapon. They get it. But are they willing to get their hands dirty to stop it? And a lot of the isolationists that we have in the Republican Party are basically, look, don't get us into Iraq. Don't get us into Afghanistan. And I am 100% in agreement with that. There's no reason for us to get into this stuff unless somehow they're messing with us. So, you know, after 9/11, we could go in and we could do this stuff. But we shouldn't be invading countries, putting boots on the ground unless it's absolutely positively necessary. And so, you know, I'm kind of like, my view is it would have been nice if Israel could have done it all. Israel has the most justification for their actions against Iran based on the direct actions of Iran and their proxies against Israel. So they have the right. And a lot of people would understand that Israel has the right to defend themselves and they have the right to attack Iran because here's a country that has said for years, death to Americans, death to Israel. So if here's a country who's trying to develop a nuclear warhead and a mechanism to launch it, an ICBM, Israel has the most to lose. So no one can blame them for taking Iran out. And it appears that's the process of what they're doing. I don't think there's, you know, they do want to eliminate their nuclear capabilities. But I think they're going in and saying, okay, we're in this. Let's just do the whole thing right. And I think they're basically, I don't want to say they're bombing them into the Stone Ages, but they're going to put Iran in a situation to where they can't harm Israel for years. And who knows what that's going to take. But it would have been nice if Israel could have done it all. My understanding is they'd already blown out the entrances to that secret, obviously it wasn't that secret, of a nuclear warehouse or whatever you want to call it, nuke site or whatever, where they're developing processed uranium. So if you can't get in or out, it's effectively ruined anyway. But you know, then I saw the image of all those trucks lined up at the entrance. So obviously Iran's trying to get this stuff out of there, so maybe there was some way in or out. And I'm pretty sure that Israel told the US, told Trump, you know, there's only one way to do this right. And that's going to have to be, you know, with these bunker busting bombs that we have. So, you know, again, I think one of the things that Trump has shown in all of this is that he's willing to make the hard decisions. He's willing, I think he's been through so much at this point that I think it's hard to intimidate him at this point, because he's like, you know what? I'm gonna leave this place a better place than I got it. And I'm gonna go in there and I'm gonna take care of this once and for all and just get this done. And so from one side, I don't have any issues of him doing this. I mean, think of the point. Well, first off, it appears the other Arab countries are staying out of it. They're not really saying much. It's like they're letting Iran get their asses kicked, and no one's saying, well, I'm going to stand up for him. Even Putin, Russia, who's been getting his drones from Iran, basically said that you have no justification for this, but I don't see any appetite for Putin to get into this conflict at all. You know, China, not interested, maybe trying to get their stuff out of Iran. So now the supreme leader of Iran has to be very concerned about whether he's going to have anything to lead after this is over. Now, Israel could have wiped out their dams, their power grids, their oil production. They have all this stuff on one island. Israel could do one strike on that island and effectively put Iran in the Stone Ages. They'd have no means for making money. They would, I mean, their whole economy would, you know, if there's a word worse than collapse, it would have, I mean, it would have devastated Iran. So it would have been nice if Israel could have had their own bunker busting bombs. You know, but to be honest with you, we've never really tested these things in combat, if you want to call it that. You know, we've beta tested them. You can see the footage of one going in on a target where they've got all this testing stuff. But what a great opportunity. If you want to look at it that way, what a great opportunity, a very safe environment, because, you know, Israel had already kind of taken over the skies. And my understanding is with these B-2s, they had F-22s and some 35s. So it was a pretty safe test. And they got a whole bunch of crews all tested up and dropping these things. It appears it worked just as good as Top Gun Maverick, that they dropped it right into the ventilation shaft. How interesting. And probably blew this thing up from the inside out. We may not know for years, you know, what happened, but it appears everything went well. We had a great testing and it was relatively safe. It also puts the fear of God into numerous countries that it's like, dude, you know, and I always say this old baseball term, what is it? Oh, now I forgot it. But it's basically throwing at somebody's head every once in a while when you pitch keeps them honest. And so they're a little apprehensive when they step up to the plate saying, I don't know what this pitcher's going to do. You know, 80% of the time it's right over the plate, so I got to be ready to swing. But, you know, 10, 20% of the time it might be right at my head. So I got to be, you know, concerned, you know. And Trump, I think, has them kind of in that mode of, if Trump tells you he's going to do something, you're like, oh, he's just bluffing. I'm not sure that I would say that, because you can't be sure whether he's bluffing or if he's going to do it. You know, a bunch of times he has said things that are a little bit crazy, and it's like, okay, that can't be right. But you always have to wonder. So, as a Republican, do I support what Trump did? Again, I kind of wish Israel could have done it all themselves. I wish we could have just stayed out of it. But we have made some points in doing this. Now, I have to say there's a high probability that some Americans or some individuals are going to die because of us dropping these bunker busting bombs in Iran, for us going into Iran, a sovereign country, and dropping these massive bombs in Iran. It is possible that terrorist actions could happen in our country because of that. So here's what could happen. Let's say that there is a terrorist action, whatever it might be, in the United States. God forbid, but let's say that it happens. Who are they going to blame? And let's say it happens in the United States by Iranians in the United States. Who are they going to blame? They're going to try to blame, excuse me, Donald Trump. I would debate that. I think Donald Trump doing what he did has made this country or this world a safer place without a possible nuclear country in Iran. So how can Iranian terrorists do a terrorist act within the borders of the United States? Who allowed that to happen? Who's to blame? I can tell you exactly who's to blame. It's Joe Biden, President Joe Biden. During his 3 or 4 years with his completely open borders, they have documented 1,500 Iranians that have come into the United States during that time period. 1,500 Iranian nationals. Do you really think people sneaking into our country from Iran are here because they want to become Uber drivers? Probably not. So they caught 1,500. They caught them. Biden's administration caught them. But yet they let 700, over 700, almost half of the ones they caught. These are the ones they caught. They let them go in the United States. They didn't even deport them. How stupid is that? You know, as I always infamously say, you might be a dumbass. Joe Biden was a dumbass. I mean, everything that him and his administration did put lives at risk, and people are going to die. Americans are going to die. They've already died. So I'm not making a prediction. I'm telling you history. People have died in the United States because of Joe Biden. He has blood on his hands. His administration did not enforce the laws of the land. He committed treason, as far as I'm concerned, by not enforcing. A president should not have the option of not enforcing our laws, especially those that are to keep us safe. So how many Republicans support Donald Trump making the hard decision, getting his hands dirty, but making a very hard decision to try to make this world safer? 68%, according to statistics, support what he did. 13% do not. And then the rest can't figure out, you know, their head from their whatever. They don't have an opinion. If you don't have an opinion on this, So do I dislike the 13% that said no? No, I don't. I'm not going to call them rhinos. I'm not going to say they're idiots. I'm not, you know, I think Rand Paul probably is against it. But I don't like exactly what some Republicans are saying. You know, Thomas Massie said it was an act of war. I don't think so. An act of war would be an invasion of Iran, which I don't see us doing. I know MTG did not support or disagrees with the action. But we'll see long term, as I always say. We're not even to halftime yet. We'll see how all this pans out and how everything turns out. You know, whether Trump long-term is considered a hero or a goat or whatever. But I do find it interesting that the other Arab countries are staying out of it. What's interesting is 79% of Americans oppose Iran getting a nuclear weapon. So 80% of Americans say, yeah, we should not, you know, Iran should not get a nuke. So the real issue here is, are you willing to get your hands dirty when Iran refuses? I mean, it's obvious at this point. I don't think anybody would debate that Iran was stalling. Well, why is Iran, you know, during these meetings to try to come up with an agreement around them having nukes or processing uranium, why would they be stalling if they were years away from a nuke? One would have to speculate that if they were trying to stall for weeks, there was a reason. And you have to assume that if Iran got their hands on a nuke, they would announce it, which, well, maybe they wouldn't. Actually, you know what? They probably wouldn't. And they would launch that nuke right over Israel and detonate it at a high altitude, which would cause all kinds of havoc and death in Israel. You know, you see these, the THAAD and Patriot systems, those intercept at a certain range or distance. You know, what if they, you know, detonated the nuke just outside of the range of these systems? It would still, it could devastate Israel. So you, I think you have to assume that them trying to stall on these talks when they said, hey, they're not bargaining in good faith anymore. You know, Trump gives them 60 days. Where did he come up with the 60 days? Could have been someone from the intel who said, you know, hey, we think in about 90 days, they actually could have a weapon and a system to deploy it. So maybe that's where the 60 days came up. And then the whole 2 weeks, I think Trump told them 2 weeks to say, hey, you got 2 weeks to relax. And I'm thinking, new moon's coming up, guys. If you haven't learned anything from Iraq, we launch our first strikes during the new moon or shortly around that. They had to know something was up. I kind of wish that Trump hadn't, you know, had to do this. But I look at it as, you know, he's willing to make the hard decisions, to do the things that he had to do to make things safer. I do believe because of this, we're safer. Because of what Joe Biden did in his term 4 years ago, we're in trouble. You know, we have all kinds of people in this country that we have no idea where they are. We have about, what is it, 100 to 200,000 kids, unaccompanied minors, that we don't know where they are. We released unaccompanied minors to sponsors or whatever in this country, basically setting them up for human traffickers. Joe Biden has done so much harm and damage and mayhem to this country. Again, numerous people have died because of the direct actions of Joe Biden. And some would argue with me, wait a minute, I don't think Joe Biden knew what he was doing. And you know what? We could have that conversation because that might be right. That might be true. It might be that they had, you know, he had no idea what was going on. There's a good chance that Hunter Biden is the one who pushed the button on his own pardon to sign it. We don't know what all happened. And we're not really going to know how this is going to play out, but understand, I personally would say, you know, keep your head down, but don't, you know, go crazy about this. But hopefully some of these Iranians who snuck into our country are like, hey, I like it here. You know, why don't we just try to see if we can't, you know, stay here for as long as possible. But if they basically are terrorists that Iran snuck in during the Biden administration, during this open period, we're probably going to have some bad events in the next 6 months or at some point. You got to wonder, when is Israel going to stop with what they're doing? I mean, they're bombing the daylights out of Iran. I think that they want to make sure that they finish it, that they finish everything that they've started. You know, at this point, why not just finish it up? But, so that's kind of what's going on there. I'm trying to think if there's any other current event stuff that's coming up on the headlines. I'm not too impressed with Iran's response. I don't anticipate any direct response. I would predict more of a terrorist response in the next few months. But I don't know how much they have that they can actually do. So that's about all I have to say. Looks like it's a quiet, I mean, this is like a summer rerun series for these podcasts. I love the Chuck and Julie show. I love to guest host for them so they can go out and have fun with their kid watching him play in a golf tournament. I know he's playing as we speak, so that's a great thing for Rev out there playing a round of golf. Hopefully he's doing very well. So I've kind of spent the time that I could to talk about this. I'm kind of waiting for John to pop on. But what's interesting is, you know, I keep saying this, you know, John and I are so busy. I'm turning down cases every week that I just say that I can't work on these criminal cases. So I'll do this little portion, changing up the whole subject. If there's anybody who wants to talk about Iran before I move on, now would be a great time. I don't see too many people that are actually online and stuff. So it might be one of those podcasts. Everyone should be busy. It's summertime. Go out and have fun. So enjoy yourself during the summers. But one of the things that I've realized being in law enforcement after my computer science and computer engineering career, getting into law enforcement for 17 years, and then being a detective for 10 years, working on over 80 homicides and stuff, and then now as a consultant for over 10 years, working predominantly for defense attorneys, I'm more than happy to work for prosecutors. They tend to not want to pay people when they can get people for free from law enforcement. Why pay me? I get it. But there's always this, you know, if you're not doing nefarious things, you'll never need an attorney. Well, I'm here to tell you that may not be true. There's could be a situation where you need to get an attorney. And you're like, man, I never thought that I would have to go get an attorney. I never thought that I'd have to do that. So how do you find an attorney? I mean, you're not in the business. There's no reason for you to know attorney, unless you happen to know attorney. But a lot of attorneys are going to recommend their buddies, and I get that. But you got to make sure you get the right attorney. I one time saw an attorney. I'm trying to remember what kind of attorney he was. He was some kind of civil attorney or patent attorney or something. Had nothing to do with criminal law. And his girlfriend accused him of domestic violence. So he was in this courtroom, and I was there to meet with the judge afterwards to get a warrant signed. So I was just sitting in the back of the courtroom watching this. And, you know, he kept acting. This attorney, I mean, he was an attorney, was making a fool of himself. I mean, I was like, who is this guy, you know, representing himself? This doesn't make any sense to me. And then he talked to, you know, he's telling the jury, you know, hey, I'm an attorney, you know, but he doesn't do civil or doesn't do criminal cases. And he looked, I mean, he looked very silly, trying to represent himself as an attorney. He did some maneuvers in the courtroom. You know, you've probably seen this. And I got John that he joined. You can throw him on if you want. I'm just talking about, you know, if you ever need to have an attorney, the things that you should do. So John's with us. I'm going to finish this up. And if he wants to add to it, he can. I'm talking about how I saw an attorney who was not a criminal attorney represent himself in a domestic violence case in a trial in El Paso County. And he made a fool of himself. And you know, you always see in the courtroom where the lawyers walk around. That's not how it works. Courtroom's pretty boring. You have to stand at the podium. You have to ask the judge if you can approach the bench, approach the witness, or if you can go over by the jury. You're not to go anywhere near the jury. The jury needs to feel comfortable. Well, this guy was doing his closing arguments, and he walked over to the jury and got right up in a woman's face in the jury box, and the judge had to tell him to back away. I think he scared the hell out of that juror. So he didn't know what he was doing. So if you happen to need a criminal lawyer, so there's different types of lawyers that you need. Obviously, you might need an estate lawyer, a patent lawyer, civil lawyer, whatever. But how do you find a criminal attorney if you don't know any? If you go on the internet, all you're going to do is pick the attorney that has the best website or their last name starts with an A, you know, which is may not be what you want. So you need to find an attorney if you have any friends or anyone that you've ever known that's used attorneys, or you call me or John, if you know us. And we'll tell you the best attorneys in Colorado Springs and in Denver, because we know who they are. We've worked with them on multiple cases. And the ones that we would use, and that's kind of what you want, is someone who recommends someone. It's like, if I got jammed up, or if I got in trouble, or needed an attorney, if I was falsely accused, which attorney would I use? And then that's the one that you want. Please don't pick one out of the phone book. That doesn't even really exist. You're going to get it off the internet. Make sure you talk to someone and ask around about trying to get your hands on a good attorney, because there's a lot of them that are good. There are a few that are bad, and you want to make sure you get a good one. So, John, I see that you're on. Now, John's been kind of under the weather a little bit.
I have been. So I have a cough drop in my mouth, Mike. So I'm going to try not to be rude and sound like I have stuff in my mouth, but I do have a cough drop in my mouth.
But you probably should be wearing a mask so you don't get me sick, all
right? That's
right.
That's right. That's right.
So one of the things that we've been talking about, and we've gone through this in a lot of the cases we worked on, the cases where a lot of people think that if they go to trial and they're sitting a jury or something, they're always like, well, the cops are obviously not going to bring an innocent person to trial. I think we're here to tell you that is not the case. We have represented numerous clients or worked on cases as experts where we know they're innocent. We know they had nothing to do with the case, you know, with this crime or whatever. They're either set up, you could say, by the cops, which has happened. There are corrupt cops. I've known of a few, like the old sheriff of El Paso, Bill Elder. I'll tell you, my opinion is he was as corrupt as can be. The old DA, Dan May, I think was corrupt as can be. My opinion, having worked with both of them or seen them in action. But here recently, we had the Karen Reed case. Now, everyone's got to be fired up about the Karen Reed case. She was just recently cleared or vindicated. Well, not vindicated. That would not be the right word. But I don't know how much. Did you watch the Karen Reed case on the news or anything? Have any thoughts about that case?
Yeah, I mean, I think the most tragic part of this whole thing, Mark, is, you know, as you were saying, you know, are there corrupt cops? The problem that you see is that a lot of people within the government, whether it's prosecutors or people within law enforcement, it's all about wins and losses. And if you look at what the Karen Reed case was about, right, it's a case where, you know, this gal is alleged to have killed her boyfriend, who was, I think, a police officer up in Massachusetts. But the worst part of it all is that, you know, what nobody talks about is that, you know, she's tried first. There's a hung jury. You know, some months later, you know, she's tried again. And, you know, yeah, she's found not guilty. But what people don't talk about is you're not going to get some kind of an apology from the prosecutor's office for what they've done to her. And, you know, right now, I think the preliminary numbers that they're saying is that this defense costs $5 million. And there's not a chance that she's going to recoup that. You know, I think they have like a, you know, a GoFundMe account of some sort that has raised, you know, some monies. But, you know, here's a gal who's gone through two proceedings. Once hung, the second found not guilty, and she, you know, people think, oh, well, you know, she lucked out. I mean, where is she going to come up with this money? You know, she may not be going to prison, but she might as well have gone to prison, because financially she's ruined. And so, you know, I think she probably has some family members that were able to help her. But, you know, how many people go through this? It's funny you and I are having this conversation, Mark, because I just read through a complaint of a case in Colorado where a kid in college was initially arrested on a sexual assault allegation. The judge dismisses it because there's not probable cause. Which is extremely rare. But get this. They're not happy with it. They, meaning the government, aren't happy with it. So what do? They take it to a grand jury They get a true bill from the grand jury,
Right.
and the kid is subsequently arrested again. And a second judge dismisses the charges. But again, right? I mean, you talk about things like this happening. I mean, it happens, unfortunately, more so than not. And if it happens once, the system is broke because, it's not this presumption of innocence. When we talk about crimes like sexual assault allegations or crimes involving children, there's this presumption of guilt, and you better prove your innocence, not the other way around. And that's the scary part of these types of cases, is that people automatically, whenever you hear of a crime involving kids or a sexual assault or even murder, that that person needs to rot in hell and that there's no due process. But what we don't talk about is when the government makes mistakes and does things potentially illegally in order to acquire an arrest. That's not okay, and it's
Right.
happening. And it's not just happening in small communities, in rural areas of the United States. It's happening everywhere, big cities, small cities, you name it. And unfortunately, we're seeing it, Mark. I mean, when you and I started working these cases, there was this, this thought that, John and Mark, they've really stooped to an all-time low because now
Right.
they're defending criminals, right? And it's not a matter of defending anything. We're holding people accountable. Look, if you did a good job and you investigated a case properly and there's evidence to support the allegations, then a jury decides that person's innocence or guilt, not us. But when you do a horrible job, you should be held accountable. And it's probably the one profession in the entire country where there's not really accountability. If a doctor makes a mistake and operates on the wrong leg or takes out the wrong organ, right? There's medical malpractice. You can be sued for that.
Right.
If you build a bridge and it collapses and it kills a bunch of people, you're going to be held accountable. If you build a house or a building and it collapses, you're going to be held accountable. But in the United States of America, you can arrest somebody based on very limited information. You can actually lie about
Yes.
that information and get somebody arrested. And I'm living proof of it. I can't talk a lot of details, but how do you get indicted for kidnapping somebody you never met? I mean, that's the scary part of, I think that's why I have maybe a passion for this kind of work, is because there's got to be accountability. Everybody should be held accountable for their actions. And why is it that if you're a prosecutor or you're a police officer, that somehow that barrier is lower, and you can do whatever you want, but we're not going to hold you accountable for your actions. So, I am a big proponent of the truth, and it's unfortunately something that we're seeing far too often. And we're the anomaly in this, Mark. We are the
Right.
ones that get hammered, where people demand Shrek hearings and they question your credibility. I've gone through two of them, and it's nothing more than an attempt to ruin me and my credibility. Y
And
yet here's
actually, to explain that, I want to explain this a little further
Sure.
so people understand this, because I
Yeah.
really didn't even understand this when I was a detective. So when John and I both were investigators with the El Paso County Sheriff's Office, we got called to court multiple times. We've testified before. We went independent as consultants. And the people who were calling us were prosecutors. They were the district attorneys. So they would call us and qualify us as experts. And now that we went independent as consultants, when we're called by the defense, they want to challenge the fact that we're experts, that we know what we're talking about. Well, let's understand this. In the past, your agency, your district attorney's office called us as an expert, but now all of a sudden that we're working for the other team, we're stupid and we're no longer experts. And that's what a Shrek hearing is called. It's where you question the science, is this method based in science? Is this person truly an expert? So it gives you an opportunity to bring them in, put them on the stand, and run them through the ringer to see if they truly know what they're talking about. And John, there multiple times they bring him in, the same group that qualified him as an expert, 15 years ago, all of a sudden now he's not, and they want to question him. And you've succeeded in every one of these hearings.
Yeah, but that's when there's something wrong with the system is when
Exactly.
you all we're doing is we're saying, look, if the information is not factual, then get an expert to get on the stand to testify as to the veracity and the accuracy of our testimony. But it's not about that, right? It's you start to attack the individual because they know darn well. I mean, that Lisa Chase case, Mark, is a perfect example, right? Here's a gal who's arrested 4 times in 80 days for something she didn't do. So I wrote an opinion saying, look, it's not the right person. You may want to look at this area. And instead of looking into that area and investigating the crime, what they did was they attacked me. And, only by chance that the judge in that case, found me to be credible, that they then went out and actually looked into what I was claiming. And they actually found out that she was not the one who committed the crime. So, we see
And they
this,
arrested the person
and they arrested the person who did
who
it.
actually did
Exactly.
it.
Yeah. But at the end of the day, Mark, what ends up happening is, we're the bad guys. We're the bad guys because how dare you question what law enforcement is doing? How dare you question what the prosecutors are doing because they're doing the work of God? No, you are not doing the work of God when you decide to go ahead and lie or not be very forthcoming. Why do we have these issues where we have prosecutors who have been disbarred because of not providing, discovery, what we call a Rule 16 violation? They don't provide all the information to the other side. They hold back on the things that may be critical to their prosecution. And so we call them out on it. We tell them, you're not providing, you're not being forthcoming. Your analysis of this digital evidence or procedurally how you investigated this was not proper. And now all of a sudden we're the assholes. We're the people that didn't do the right thing. And so that's the disheartening part of this, is, I know what you and I are doing and what we're capable of doing and what we're doing as far as the accountability. And, we hear it all the time. Like, I'd like an opportunity to have a chance at POF or San Augustine once they get on the stand, that I just want an opportunity to cross-examine them and show them, that they don't know what they're talking about or that, again, it's not about the facts. It's now about wins and losses. And that's the unfortunate part of this, because what they don't take into account, and I can speak personally about this, is they don't talk about the effect that this has on a person's, mental health or their physical and financial health. I mean, you wrongfully arrest somebody and they have to go through some process of how to defend themselves. It's a very tough thing to be in. So, and I know Mark, because you've been there by my side from the moment my thing went down, and I will tell you that very few have done that. And the reality is, people that you and I worked with, all of a sudden, we're the bad guys because the people they put behind bars, they think that they shouldn't have any kind of due process, and that's not the way it works.
Right. And I, as I always say, and I try to explain, I still teach at the college and I talk to recruits and stuff all the time. And they're like, what? You went to the dark side? The only way this system works is if every chair is filled. And so if you have prosecutors, law enforcement are the only ones who have experts. And I will tell you, the FBI is really big on setting up agents as experts. And then they walk into a courtroom and it's like, oh, it's an FBI agent. And then they get up on the stand and they lie through their teeth and they say things that are not based in science.
Right.
And if there's no one, like you said, the term I love, to challenge the veracity of their testimony or the evidence, people are getting steamrolled and they're getting convicted on crimes they didn't commit.
Right.
The law enforcement officers don't care. The prosecutors don't care because, again, they take it personal and it's wins and losses for them. And, you know, I always joke about the time that a DA asked me on the stand, you know, when you found this exculpatory evidence, why didn't you just call and tell me? Like, for God's sakes, I would have stopped everything. It's like, because I know that wouldn't have happened.
Right.
You know, I would have told you what I found that was exculpatory, and you would have gone and cleaned it up. You wouldn't have spent time to investigate to see if it was true. You would have tried to work as hard as you could to prove that what I just said wasn't true.
Right.
You know, to
Right.
come after me or get rid of my credibility or whatever. I've had people on the stand ask me, "Weren't you fired from the sheriff's office?" It's like, "No, I retired." You know, "Well, I don't know. You're pretty young to be retired." I said, "I don't know. I get a monthly check. I think that's a sign of retirement."
Yeah.
You know, so they take it personal. I've had prosecutors yell at me on the stand and all kinds of things. And it's like, look, let's just stick to the evidence. Let's stick to the facts. All I'm doing is I'm bringing it up, you know, that here are the facts. Let the chips fall. And ultimately, if you're going to say, let the jury decide, then let them get all the information. Why, as a prosecutor, are you afraid of them getting an expert from the defense side that might, oh, I don't know, ruin the credibility of your expert, who's not an expert, who hasn't been in this industry for 20 some years or whatever. But I mean, I do embrace this, to be honest with you. I get sad when I see cops make statement on the stand that I know is not accurate. That
Right.
really bothers me. I'm
Right.
sure we've both seen it. It's like, that's not true. You know, you
But
don't know what you're talking about.
I think a lot of them lose focus, Mark, and you know they're looking at what the crime is, and they find that you know a lot of these crimes are heinous,
Right.
and there needs to be accountability. Don't get me wrong, somebody needs to be held accountable for that crime. But you know if you do your job and you do it right, that stuff will come together. The evidence will present itself, right? There will be evidence to show that whoever is responsible did it. But it's your job as an investigator, as a detective, as a prosecutor, right? To seek justice, to gather the facts and allow the prosecutors to seek justice. And if that justice indicates that that person is potentially innocent, then you have an obligation to dismiss the case because that's the
Right.
That is what you are chartered to do. You're not chartered to win, and you know that's not the goal. The goal is to seek justice.
And that needs to be their goal. And too many times I've seen DAs where they're like, well, let's just let the jury decide. We'll just, you know, and then they actively fight to keep us off the stand.
Right.
So they're saying that I just want, you know, blind justice or whatever. I'm just searching for justice, but I don't want the defense to be able to bring their expert on the stand and explain to the jury information, you know, that may have been explained to them wrong
Right.
or whatever. And as I always say, this is one of the areas I think where we do pretty well in, you only have one opportunity to screw up a crime scene. And I think this whole Karen Reed case, kind of getting back to where we started,
Right.
is look, if you were to ask me, hey, you got all this information, or you know, you've been watching the news and everything, and I'd tell you, first off, the news is not a good place to get your information. But do you think Karen Reed's innocent or guilty? And I'm like, I have no clue.
Right.
All I can tell you is based on a jury of 12, they didn't make their case to
Right.
prove that she was guilty. Now, so when they're pissed off, and I guess some of the cops are now saying, you know, oh, she got away with murder. No. You let her. If she truly is guilty, you let her get away with it because you screwed up the crime scene. You screwed up the investigation and you clustered everything to the point where she could come in front of a jury and say, look how they screwed everything up, to where a jury's like, I can't convict her.
Right.
So if they want to get pissed at someone, if they think she's guilty, and I have no clue, but if they think she's guilty, they have no one to blame but themselves.
I agree. You know, and that's the problem with these kinds of cases is that it's real easy to deflect and blame the other side and say she got away with murder, but there's no self-reflection, right? They don't look at what they've done, what they could have done better, so that they could have gathered the appropriate pieces of evidence to show that guilt and to prove to a jury that, she's the only one responsible. But sounds to me in that case that there was a lot of physical evidence that actually pointed away from her and didn't
Right.
include her. So, if that's the case, then what actually went on? Because I think at some point in that case, there was actually some statements made that maybe one of the decedents was her boyfriend's co-workers, that maybe they were involved in beating him up, and they were actually responsible for his death and not her. I think the allegation was that she had hit him with a car, her car, and that that it resulted in his death, which I think she was charged with second degree murder. But again, if you don't have evidence to support that she hit him with the car, well, then maybe we got to start somewhere else, right? Like, again, and they should have learned their lesson from the initial case when it was brought forth and there was a hung jury. It was probably should have been an eye opener that maybe we didn't do all the things that we needed to do. Now let's figure out how to do it better before this next trial, if we can, right? If there are things that we can still acquire that may prove her guilt
Or
or dismiss
investigate
it.
everybody else.
That's
You
right.
know, expand
The investigation.
your suspects.
That's right.
If you could, and that's the thing, they talk about that confirmational bias, and it exists.
Oh,
I've
yeah.
seen it with detectives that I have worked with that once they go, hey, he's a dirtbag. I know he's dirty. I know he did it. Well, as soon as you hear that from the detective, it's like, are you going to investigate anybody else?
Right.
Why should I? I know they did it.
Right.
You know, so if they're only looking at her, who knows what it would have stirred up if they did start investigating some of their own or these other cops at this party or whatever,
Sure.
that what, you know, evidence they might have gotten. But and we don't know. I mean, I don't know
And
if you realize that, you know, Barry Murphy was re-arrested again.
correct.
And I'll tell you, I don't know if he's innocent or guilty. I have no clue.
Right.
But I hope for God's sakes, this time they have some evidence other than he drove south. That's what the cell phone records show. And I think it shows him driving the other way or whatever. I don't know. I mean, I don't know all the specifics of this case. And I have a feeling you can't really talk about it.
Can't.
But I'm just saying, if you bring someone up again, like you said, you know, you indict them, it gets thrown out. You go to, okay. So this whole thing about going to a grand jury, I laugh when I hear that. The grand jury only gets to hear what the prosecutor wants them to hear.
Correct.
So they have a better chance of getting through a grand jury than they do a judge at prelim. So they couldn't get through the judge at prelim. So, okay, let's go to a grand jury where we have some number of people who are not knowledgeable in the law.
Right.
You know.
And there's a lot of rapport building that you see with the prosecutors and the
Yes.
grand jurors. They get chummy and they,
Hey, Bob.
hey, exactly. And it gets to be this, very, and again, like you said, we don't get to, there's no defense attorney in there. It's just
No.
strictly the government, and they get to present their case. And then, if that grand jury comes back with a true bill, they've accomplished what they've needed to accomplish, and that is to get the true bill so they can move forward with charges.
And actually, help me. For some reason, in the back of my mind, I think there's been previous cases where the person who knows they're being investigated, they know they're going to a grand jury, and they've actually had their lawyer say to the prosecutor, "I'm willing to come in and answer questions to the grand jury to set the record straight." And they're like, "No, we don't need you." And then they indict them.
Well, exactly. They don't need it. They don't need to hear from you. They just need to, they just need to get other witnesses to come in. And here's the worst part of grand juries, Mark. You could be a law enforcement officer and you can lie within a grand jury and there's no recourse for you. They can go in, they can lie, and there's nothing that you can do to hold them accountable for lying to a grand jury. And the result is what? You get indicted, which means you'll get arrested for certain charges. And you come to find out later on that, certain witnesses lied under oath and there's no accountability. And that's the worst part of this whole thing, which is why, I'm an advocate of getting rid of absolute
Absolute
immunity.
immunity.
Yeah, for prosecutors.
Yeah.
Nobody should be absolutely immune of excuse me, of anything. Nobody should
Right.
be absolutely immune.
Even judges.
Even judges.
I mean, if you do
We're
something
human.
that
We
is
make errors.
corrupt
That's
and
right.
you knowingly do it,
That's right.
like you had that judge in Wisconsin. I love this story. She's up in Wisconsin and she helps to sneak out a domestic abuser, out of her courtroom away from ICE. And then she, what does she do? She claims absolute immunity. Hey, it's my courtroom. So what she's arguing is that inside of her courtroom, she can do anything she wants. She could murder someone and she would have absolute immunity in her courtroom.
Yeah,
Because this had nothing to do with her little abuse hearing. They had a warrant for his arrest and she helped him evade arrest. I mean, just amazing that they let that happen. But we could go on forever, which I know we could do. And John,
right.
I appreciate you coming out, even when you're not feeling well. I know, like you, I've got a big hearing that I got next week and stuff, and I'm way behind on cases and stuff. But we love discussing these things, and we have a bunch more. And we keep saying this as teasers going forward. We have so many cases where we're like, "What the frick?" And they're interesting. And one of these times, we need to pick one or two of them and just walk you through the whole case here in Colorado and tell you where it happened and
Sure.
everything like that. Where we've stepped in and we've helped as consultants, as experts, to kind of say, no, here's the science, and I'm going to be doing that next week in Pueblo, explaining to the judge the real science and that people made statements that aren't true. So
Right.
I think our time is up. Thanks, John.
No
Any
problem.
last
Thanks for
words or
having
anything?
me. No, thanks for having me. I
Okay.
appreciate it.
Outstanding. I don't know if Chuck and Julie are going to be back on Wednesday. I hope they are. But we'll see you on the Chuck and Julie Show this Wednesday. Have a great week.